Access number 29536, Mr. Bert Scrivens, Reel 7. Now, so what happened next then? I mean, you've been you got married. You're sort of ensconced in the battalion, getting used to it.
And yes, I was getting to be part of the battalion, and of course my loyalties then had changed from the 9th Battalion to the 8th Battalion, which I thought was very good. About the next thing that happened, I had a week's leave, of course, to get married. About the next thing was we were inspected by the Colonel of the Regiment. Duke of Kent. Yes, we were on parade as usual about 8 o'clock in the morning, and he arrived about 11. And we were on the barrack square waiting all that time, and I was disgusted in that he turned up in RAF uniform, custom made with a most unusual Air Force blue. To inspect his own regiment, which I thought was a bit off. However, it was the usual parade. You're on parade hours beforehand, and you stayed on parade quite a long time afterwards, and he came and went, and that was that.
Did he say anything or make any impression other than his uniform?
No, not at all. Not at all. It was just before he was killed, I believe, in an aircraft accident, something like that. Life went on as normal, and then we were moved to Rendlesham.
To where?
Rendlesham, R-E-N-D-L-E-S-H-A-M.
Where's that?
That was in Norfolk or Suffolk, somewhere like that, up in the aircraft flying field areas where all the bombers and such used to go. The rumour was that we were going to become part of the new Air Force Regiment.
The RAF Regiment.
Now, what
did you think of that rumour?
Not a lot. It didn't happen. We took over a house, as usual, one of the country manors, Rendlesham Manor, and we had huts and tents and whatever. And we were suddenly given 2 weeks embarkation leave.
Where did you go?
Well, I went, came back to Ashford. I went home to Tooting, where my parents were, and spent time with them. Had a hell of a time to stop everybody saying that it was embarkation leave. But as soon as they'd heard you were home for 2 weeks, they knew damn well that you were. And then went back to Rendlesham. Then we began assembling the stores, crating, logging everything that we had, and disposing of surplus stuff, sending it back, ready for our departure. Nobody knew when or where, anything. Those who were lucky were given a weekend pass every now and then, just a few of us. And we did have one inspection, I suppose it was, a visit by a member of the royal family. I'm not sure who it was. Some said it was the king himself, but I don't think so. We mainly just lined the route inside the manor and gave three spontaneous cheers by numbers. And except for one bloke who actually booed and his feet didn't touch the ground there on. And that was about it as far as we were concerned. But I was resuming then clerical duties, listing and listing and listing, because I was one of the few who could use a typewriter. And we eventually worked straight through for 48 hours. No stopping at all, just to get it done. And we worked for 48 hours, sustained by bully beef sandwiches and tea, mainly. In the early hours of the second night, I do remember suddenly waking up with one of the typewriter keys halfway towards the platen and thinking to myself, oh, blimey, where am I? And start typing on again. But in between times, we had some Remington American sporting rifles, 22s, and hundreds and hundreds of rounds of surplus ammunition, because 22s wouldn't be needed. So my mate, myself, used to go down to a little quarry which we'd used as a 22 range, shooting. We got quite good with that kind of rifle, and being a fairly good shot to start with, we started off with shooting at targets, then we shot at poppies to shoot the head off, then eventually we drew a cartoon picture of Hitler and his mouth and stuck a lighted cigarette in his mouth and tried to shoot the cigarette out of the mouth. And then we went rabbiting. And we got very good at that. And hitting a rabbit moving with a rifle is not easy. But we did it. Eventually I got good enough to be able to say, well, the only kill that is counted in our little competition between ourselves was the next shot of a moving rabbit, which is pretty difficult. Anyway, we ate very well, because this is where the poacher bit in the other battalion came in. I knew how to paunch, skin and joint a rabbit, which we presented to a cook who used to make us rabbit pies and stews and whatever, and my mates. We did very nicely, thank you. Much to the disgust of the farmer who owned the fields we were rabbiting on. And so it went on, and gradually it was my turn. This would be August. It was my turn to go on weekend leave, instead of which we entrained and disappeared. What in actual fact happened was that the train took us up to Gourock in Scotland, where...
August 42. What happened when you got there? Sorry.
We were taken out on a lighter to the ships were standing out. And we got onto a ship.
What was its name, if you remember?
The Almanzora.
Alman?
Almanzora. Which was a South American postal liner, really. Used to deliver the mail. It's the RMS, I think. It was Royal Mail ship. Almanzora, which had been converted to a troop ship. And we set out there for a week, roughly. We were allowed no mail in or out, and we knew it was sitting on the dockside, but we weren't allowed to have any mail or send any.
What were we waiting for a convoy, or...?
Well, probably, yeah, I suppose we were waiting for a convoy to assemble, Not that we knew, we just sat there on the ship, as it were. And after about a week, we sailed out into the Irish Sea, I guess, straight into the eye of a storm. Now, for some reason or other, my father, who thought he knew everything, advised me that if I went to sea, the first thing one does is stay out on deck. Do not stay amidships, but get as far forward and aft as you could. And just stay there. You wouldn't get seasick then, he said. So I did. Well, I thought he knew everything too. So I stood as far forward as I could on the forecastle head, on the main deck, and we went into this storm. Well, as I stood on the main deck, right up as far forward as I could, at the sharp end as it were, I could look straight up and still see the sea above me. That's the height of the waves, as it were. And I was fine. I must admit, I didn't get seasick. Then, in the evening, well, I went down for meals, which were pretty ghastly. In the evening, I went down, slung a hammock. I was two decks down in the hold, which was our mess deck. Slung a hammock and laid in that, and I was still all right, until somebody went under my hammock and swung it, which did it. I was then sick once. Got back to the hammock and I was never seasick again, which was rather good. I was the only person on the mess deck who was eating.
Now, what were the mess deck conditions like? I mean, how did you take... Because not everyone can sleep in a hammock. Some people love them. What was it like?
It was crowded to start with. There were long tables, benches on each side. There were hooks for hammocks. You slept on the deck. You slept on the mess deck itself. You slept on the forms. You slept in a hammock. You slept where you could. It was crowded. It stank. It was horrible. And two decks down, the ventilation wasn't very good. And you were jammed in. Anyway, we kept sailing.
Why was the food so bad?
Food, well, it was monotonous. One had to go in turn to the galley and pick up a mess deck. I think it was 12 men. You had to pick up 12 men's rations at each meal, take it back to your mess deck, and then divide it out between you, and so on. You had to keep the mess deck tidy because of ship's inspection, which happened once a day, every morning. And mainly it was monotonous. Eggs that had come from South Africa, as far as I could see, and were going back to South Africa with us. It was just... I suppose typical army or navy food, as far as I could tell. We were allowed, well, we couldn't sleep on deck, of course, to start with. But later on, when we got down to the tropics, which was weeks later, we were allowed to sleep on deck, which was a great relief. We'd take our blankets up on deck and very early in the evening, grab a space and put them down, pack and so on, and you'd sleep on deck, which was much better.
What route did you take? What do you remember of it?
As far as I know, we went probably about three quarters of the way to America, I think. Then we lost track, because being in a convoy, you're zigzagging all over the place and changing formation. So you're never quite sure which direction you were going. It was monotonous. although they did their best to keep us occupied. But it was monotonous. And eventually, some 3-4 weeks later, at least, we arrived at Freetown in Sierra Leone. Our ship, because it had sustained some damage to the railings, the rail, ship's rail, we were allowed alongside. Most of them stayed out in the roads. And while we were alongside, of course, we weren't allowed to dump our rubbish overboard. So that was assembled in the forecastle well, between the forecastle and the main decks and so on. And if you can imagine the kind of stuff that is accumulated, all the rubbish, the leavings of the mess deck and so on, were heaped in a stinking great pile on the forecastle well. And I remember extremely well because I drew guard duty right there. And a Negro, if one is allowed to say that, welder came aboard and repaired the ship's railings alongside me. He was probably, as far as I can remember, the first Negro I'd ever seen. Certainly the first Negro working person I'd ever seen. And for years, the sight of a Negro was always associated with the stench of this heap of rubbish. If you can imagine old eggs, fishes, fish skins, rubbish, meals, whatever.
So how did you get rid of this rubbish?
Oh, we had to wait until we went to sea again. And then it went down the chutes and went overboard. But we weren't allowed to do that in the harbour.
Did you get ashore?
No, we weren't allowed ashore. The only thing that did happen there was that the ship's aunt major had us all assembled, and he said we were now in the tropics and sun helmets would be worn. And it was pouring with rain at the time. A typical army. There we were, having to wear solar topies in pouring rain when it wasn't particularly warm either.
What did you think of your topi?
Well, they were a novelty, but they were the English type, as we learned later on. And they weren't particularly effective, and they weren't particularly good-looking. And most of it would, and later did, discard them as soon as possible. But we were all warned about sunstroke, wearing them all the time, etc., etc. The only thing of interest is I saw a lovely green sunset there.
Now, what happened next? So when did you leave? You weren't there long, obviously.
We were there about a week, I suppose. Then we went out convoy again. I distinctly remember having map reading classes on deck in the middle of a convoy and describing a country walk from our Ordnance Survey maps, which struck me as a particularly ludicrous at the time, but there it was. Training was training. Oh, I also learned how to be a muleteer. In other words, how to make up a mule pack.
Yeah, tell me about that. How did you do it?
Well, they assembled everything and showed us how to tie the ropes, which assembled a mule pack, so that it could be hung onto a mule's harness, and so on. We didn't, of course, have a mule, and we didn't have a harness to hang it to, but we managed to learn how to rope them all up. And I'll never know why, because we still didn't know where we were going. But anyway, a couple of weeks later, we finished in Cape Town. And we docked there. We were all told not to say anything about the convoy or our ship or our regiment or anything else. We were also told to stay clear of District 6 and to beware of half-castes and how to tell a half-caste from a white person, female, that was, by looking at their nails and the back of a neck. And then we were allowed to go ashore for half a day. To our surprise, the civilians were queuing up to take us off to their homes, for outings, whatever. The hospitality was fantastic.
What did you do?
I was picked up by a family. The woman turned out to be a school teacher. They had a very thick South African accent. I think they were of Boer descent. It was my first experience of anything abroad. I had sweet potatoes for the first time. I do remember that. And spent the afternoon and evening with them, and then we had to return to ship, of course. The second day, bloke and myself, we decided that we would go for a meal in a good restaurant. And we queued up. They had rationing in Cape Town, which meant the restaurants didn't open until 6 o'clock in the evening. That was their rationing. So we were standing outside, and a small elderly bloke came up to us and said, "Excuse me, lads, but are you waiting to have a meal?" And we said, "Yeah, we were." And he said, "I wonder if you do my wife and myself the honour of being our guests." We were happy to oblige because we hadn't got much money anyway. We just about afford the meal. And we went in there and he told us about the local foods and which to have and the fruits and all that sort of stuff. We had a pleasant meal. And using public transport, we went to their home, which was a nice bungalow. This was late September. And we spent the evening with them, and then eventually he told us how to get back to the ship, and we did. And then, let me see, another day, we had about 5 days, I think, half days. Another day, a whole gang of us decided we'd go ashore and eat ashore. And we went into a department store that had a restaurant that was open. They were allowed to, the restaurants were not allowed to, as it were. And they asked us what we'd like to eat. So thinking we were being very funny and clever, we said we'd all have a steak. Which they said, "Yes, of course. What will you have with it?" And one of the lads, being quite a comedian, said, "I'll have an egg on top." So I said, "Yes, sir, how many?" So in the same vein, we said, "Oh, about four, I should think." And to our surprise, of course, four eggs on steak with chips and all the rest of it turned up. Then we went to a cinema, which, strangely enough, you didn't buy a cinema ticket as such. You bought a meal or a drink, coffee, soft drink, beer, whatever. That was your admission. You bought it in, you were shown to a seat. the usherette took away your tickets, which was for whatever you'd ordered, and they folded down a flap, like an aircraft, you know, flap from the seat in front of you, and you had your meal while you're watching a film. Quite novel to us. We'd never seen anything like that. And another day, I actually went to a branch of the advertising agency I'd been working for, and the owner was a relative of the owner of the advertising agency. And I was made very welcome there. And then he said, well, would you care to round up some mates and I'll take you home and you can have a meal and so on. And so I rounded up two or three blokes who were at a loose end and we met him and he took us in his car to his home in Rondebosch. And of course we'd been very tight on security and how many ships were in the convoy and all that sort of lark. And on the way to Rondebosch, he stopped on the side of the hill and he said, we'd like to get out, lads. And so we did. He took us to the side of the road and pointed downhill. And there was the harbour laid out in front of us with all our section of the convoy there. He said, if the Germans had to know anything about your convoy, they knew days and days ago. He said, and if you look down there, you can see the whole of your section of the convoy. He said, the rest of them have gone off to the next port on, wherever. He said, there's a very strong German influence here, and we're looking for Brits to come out. So, anyway, we went to his house. We were introduced to his dogs, and I mean introduced, because his two dogs were a pair of Rhodesian Ridgebacks, which were enormous animals, and I mean enormous. Look like a lion, they have a ridge, a mane down the back. Had been bred for hunting lions, apparently. Being the main guest, as it were, I was the first one out in the car, and he called one dog over and he introduced me as a friend, and the dog stood up on his hind legs and he was considerably taller than I was and rested his paws on my shoulders and flattened me and licked my face, and I was told I could then get up. Then he called the second dog over, which repeatedly. And we all had to go through the same thing. Otherwise, we'd have been in trouble with the dogs. We had a very pleasant evening there and so on. And then the last occasion, we went to the original couple that had, the second couple, I should say, that took us out and spent time with them in their bungalow out at Sea Point, I believe it was. And he asked me if I'd care to go to South Africa after hostilities. And I said, well, I could consider it. But doing what? He said, oh, there's a job for you. And I said, how? He said, I'm Chief Customs and Excise. He said, there's a job for you in Customs and Excise, no matter what. He said, we need Brits. He said, we're swamped with blacks and Boers. He said, we need Brits. You've got a job if you want it. But that's another story. Then we took off from Cape Town,